Hello, hello. Welcome back to a new episode of Starting Outside Podcast. Nico Kramer and the usual squad here today for this new episode. Of course, we're going to be touching on the Champions League final along with some other overall news that's been happening around the European football world. In the Champions League final, or we'll do the Europa League final as well. I guess we'll do Europa League first. Why not? That's only fair. Villarreal winning in a crazy penalty shootout. De Gea missing that final penalty kick. So Villarreal wins 11-10. Mattia, what were your overall thoughts? What's your overall takeaway from this game beyond Villarreal? We'll get to Villarreal in a minute, but just your biggest headline.
I mean, my biggest headline is obviously a lot of, I think, and I share this opinion with a lot of people, I think when you expected a player like Bruno Fernandes, who kind of carried Man United all season, he's been their best player for more than a year now. He's been absolutely incredible this year and is without a shadow of a doubt one of the better midfielders in the world. When you expected him to step up the most in a final, along with De Bruyne, but we'll get to De Bruyne later, he didn't step up to the occasion along with every single other Manchester United player. And I think this was fully deserved by Villarreal, and it's an incredible achievement for a team that's coming from such a small city, just 50,000 people. So incredible to see that. And I mean, oh, and another thing, the two other ex-Tottenham players who, after leaving Tottenham, get a trophy. It's starting to become a lot now, a reoccurring event. But I mean, what were your thoughts on the game, Spencer?
I mean, talking about the Tottenham players, I feel bad for them because they
have to go back.
I think it was Juan Foyth who
just
qualified for the Champions League with Villarreal and then has to return to Tottenham and the Europa Conference League.
Yeah. Not bad.
every little boy's dream playing the Europa Conference League. But, I mean, I think another person that needs to be talked about is David De Gea. I mean, his performance in the penalties, it was just such a sad way for him to go out, because it should be clear that that was his last game for Man United.
And apparently, I don't know if you guys saw it, but on his towel, he had written down notes on every single penalty taker.
But, I mean, there's a saying, like, a keeper can't lose a penalty shootout, they can only be a hero. But when you miss 11 straight penalties, which is kind of incredible if you think about it, because most of the time keepers should be saving it like 70% of the time, probably. And that's only with the top players. When it comes down to like Raul Albiol, he should be saving it a higher percent. And I think that 36 penalties in a row he hasn't saved for Man United, which is a terrible record. And I mean, I just think it was a bad performance from Man United. I don't think Ole got the tactics right. I think he played too defensive and didn't change it quickly enough. And overall, though, I'm very happy for Villarreal. I think it's huge for the Messi club.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, one thing I would say about the penalty kicks, to be fair to De Gea, is that every penalty kick was very good, including Albiol's. I think that was smashed it. It was a great penalty kick. Even John Marui, Villarreal's goalie. Of course, De Gea's wasn't very good. It shouldn't have gone that far, to be fair. Luke Shaw's penalty was horrible, and that should have been saved. But it begs the question that Spencer kind of brought up. Spencer, do you think we've seen in the past, you know, Caballero from Chelsea, and we saw in the World Cup when Silvestre came on for the Netherlands in that penalty kick shootout. Should, knowing De Gea's record in penalties, should Ole Gunnar Solskjaer put in Dean Henderson?
Undoubtedly. I mean, the Netherlands won a World Cup quarterfinal simply by making that decision. Yeah. They didn't make it the next week, which led to Messi going into the World Cup final. But, I mean, I think it's as simple as you put in your best penalty kick saver.
Yeah.
And especially with someone as terrible as De Gea, who even going into the game, he hadn't saved 25 straight penalties, which is an incredibly bad record. But I think it's one of the many tactical errors Ole made that game.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, beyond that as well, Man United, it's like you look at individual performances in that game. Like Marcus Rashford was horrible, and he received a lot of abuse. He shouldn't be receiving that ever, but he didn't have a good game. Bruno Fernandes, as you say, Mattia, didn't have a good game. Man U's goal was pretty fluke. Let's just be honest with ourselves, you know, deflection, and then Cavani taps it in. But for real, I mean, for me, the main headline has to be Unai Emery. Seriously, he owns Europa League now.
He
owns it. And, you know, he was a great coach at Sevilla. I loved him. He went to PSG, and let's be honest, he got fired off of the one game where Barca came back, one of the craziest Champions League games ever. He goes to Arsenal, disaster. But again, it has to be said. This shows it's not his fault at Arsenal. It really wasn't. And he goes to Villarreal and he buys Parejo and Coughlin and a few others. Makes his own signings, and they've been great this season in La Liga. They have been, Danny Parejo especially. But I thought in this game, and they're always going to come out defensive, right? Because they're playing against, you know, a better squad. That's the reality of things. But they came out in the 4-4-2 and they played excellent. I mean, seriously, they just played excellent. Jerome Moreno was excellent. They didn't have one of their best attackers, Chukwueze. He was hurt for this game. I think they could have won it in extra normal time, I mean, with him. But they played super well. And Unai Emery, I'm so happy for him because his last two jobs have both gone downhill in pretty bad ways. To see him bounce back like this is incredible. And beyond that, of course, Villarreal as a club, you know, less than a decade ago, they were in the second division. They got relegated to second division. They came back up, and now to see them win the Europa League is incredible, for sure. I mean, Mattia, what are your thoughts about? Let's go back to Man United or Villarreal, I guess you can say. But Mattia, what are your thoughts about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? I mean, is he the guy that can take Man U back to a Champions League, Prem, even Europa League? Can he take him back?
I mean, I think overall, Man United's season hasn't been a bad season for Ole at all, and finishing second in the Prem definitely is something to be proud of. And of course, you're one game away from winning a major title. But and I'll be interested to see. I think of course Ole's gonna remain manager, and it'll be interesting to see if he manages to get out the group stage this year, next year for the Champions League. But I mean, from what I'm seeing right now, I don't think really Ole is a major title winning a manager, and I think there's gonna have to be some changes in the managerial position for Man United if they wanna aim higher for, say, Champions League, Premier League, because I think if you add a couple players, even one or two players to that squad, along with Bruno Fernandes and the other players around him, I think you can definitely maybe not go for the Prem, but I think Europa League is definitely something you can win. FA Cup, Champions League, you can go definitely further than the group stage. So personally, I don't think Ole is the manager that's gonna necessarily make them win.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Look, Man U, contending for Europa League is not where Man U should be as a club, but that's where they are at least this season. And they were unable to do so. They were, or I guess they contended for it, but they were unable to win it. I don't think Ole is really the guy that can take Man U back to a Premier League winning team or a Champions League contending team. I mean, let's just be honest, right? Man U, since he's came in, has been an improvement. But the main improvement has been get Bruno Fernandes the ball and let him create or go score. That's been their game plan this season. And it's gotten them pretty far, you know, second in the Prem, okay. Of course, you know, Liverpool, right? We know why Liverpool wasn't good this year. Chelsea had a big switch up. So there's a lot of variables adding towards that. But I think overall, I mean, I don't see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being someone that can take them to win a Champions League or win the Prem next season. I don't think so. And you gotta look at what's available. You know, Conte, I thought would have been a good signing. Looks like he's gonna go to Tottenham, which is a good signing for them. But overall, no, I don't think he's the guy to go forward. he's not bad. He's a good place, you know, filler, I guess. But if you really want to go back to what Manny was just years ago, you have to have a top coach, 100%. So, okay, that was Europa League final. Now let's move on to the bigger one. No offense, Villarreal, but the Champions League final between Manchester City and Chelsea. Chelsea winning 1-0 with a goal from Kai Havertz right before halftime. Mattia, I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, Chelsea were underdogs coming into this game, even having beaten City twice in the two games before. What were your thoughts from this game, and what are you thinking moving forward?
So I think, I mean, props to Chelsea, of course, and props to Thomas Tuchel and Thiago Silva, but I don't think this was, of course, it was a horrible performance from Manchester City, and I mean, I don't understand the decision from Pep in starting. I'm pretty sure he started Raheem Sterling.
I don't
understand that decision coming from him. Raheem Sterling hasn't been a consistent starter at all this season, and I mean, he's just not the winger that you want in a Champions League final, in my opinion. I mean, Chelsea just played better, and I think it was an excellent performance from every single player on Chelsea. I mean, of course, you can point out some misses from Timo Werner, but globally, I don't think there's a single player that had a poor game. I mean, Thiago Silva came off. Even before he came off, he was playing well. Christensen had a huge game off the bench. It was unfortunate that De Bruyne got injured and had to come off. Some people were calling for that to be a red card. I think that's debatable. I think you could definitely argue that it was a red card for Rudiger. But nevertheless, beautiful pass from Mason Mount. And, I mean, Zinchenko lacking defensively. And it was just one slip up that gave Chelsea the win. But I think massive performances from especially Rudiger, I think, had a huge game. Yeah. Havertz had a huge game, of course. And Conte had an incredible game as well. A little overhyped right now because of the Champions League final, but give credit where it's due. And overall, I think Chelsea definitely deserved it. They weren't the best team in the tournament, but hey, second Champions League victory, and I don't think any Chelsea fan is complaining at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, no question. I think, Spencer, from the Man City perspective, and I guess a neutral as well, it really came down to the starting 11 for City. I mean, where did Guardiola go wrong? What do you think?
I think it's clear where he went wrong, and that was when playing without a CDM. I mean, he plays with a CDM every single game this season and then decides at the last second to change it up for a big game in the Champions League, which isn't unusual for him. And much like his time at City in the Champions League, it ended in disaster. I think it's fair to say that it was a large part in giving Chelsea the win.
Yeah.
And I think while it's not on Pep completely, I think that that decision definitely was wrong and a massive error from him.
And you know, Spencer, what do you make of Tuchel playing five in the back?
I mean, it worked all season for him. And, I mean, you saw
starting
where they
Reece
were.
James, a player
you
like
saw,
Reece.
You saw where they were when Lampard left and where they are now. I think that's full credit to Tuchel. He figured out how to get the most from this team, and it really worked brilliantly. And Reece James, of course, had a great game. But for me, the standout player for Chelsea, and I'm sure you will agree with this, Mattia, was N'Golo Kanté. He was unbelievable winning the ball back. And I definitely think that if France win the Euros, or even if they don't, I think he still should be either the Ballon d'Or winner or up there at the minimum.
I mean, Nico, quickly, I also wanted to talk. There was, I don't know if you remember precisely, but there was a potential penalty kick check in the second half. I think it was the 60th minute. What do you make of the referee's decision there? Because a lot of all the Man City players were claiming for a penalty. What did you make of that? Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't know. Not a penalty for me. I think it was the heat of the moment. You know, that's just too harsh to give a penalty, in my opinion. I'm glad it was reviewed, you know, and they moved on beyond it. I think you just can't give that away. That's, again, as I said, you know, heat of the moment. City, it looks like a penalty, but come on, that's not a penalty in my view. But I have to agree with what you said, Spencer. I mean, Pep Guardiola's. I don't get it. You know, Ilkay Gundogan, 13 goals in the Prem this year, and we know how City plays without this normal number nine, no striker. Mm-hmm. Gundogan has been so key in that by getting, you know, 13 goals, as I said, because he's been scoring quite a few goals, important goals. But then you put him out there in with next to Silva and Foden in the midfield, and he's called upon to play as a CDM. And so now you're removing one of your best attacking players into a CDM position, which he's not used to. And on top of that, right, you think, okay, well, what are you going to put up top to replace that goal-scoring threat? And you put Raheem Sterling, who has not been playing well upon not playing that much in recent weeks. It just makes no sense. I think that's what cost him the game. I think if they put out Rodri or Fernandinho, take away Sterling, move Foden up, I think they can win this game, no question. But that was just that was such a stupid mistake. And we saw it against Lyon last year. We saw it many times at Bayern Munich. And, well, $1.2 billion spent on this squad. Still no Champions League. I mean,
Nico, is this a successful season for Man City?
No. You sure you won the Prem and they won the, what was it, the Carabao Cup? But look, that's great. I'm not gonna hate on that. It's a fine accomplishment to win another Premier League in the way that they did. But they want the Champions League. I mean, no one can deny that at this point. Manchester City and Pep Guardiola want a Champions League, and it's another year in which they don't do that. This is the furthest they've gotten, and that's why I'm saying that for Pep Guardiola to make a change like that, which ruined the whole dynamic of the team, of the game. I mean, come on. And that's child's play, in my opinion. It's kind of disappointing to see. But I can't say, sadly, that I am, like, shocked by this. Because I think we all knew there was some sort of change going to come, as Guardiola always does. I wasn't expecting it to be this big of one. Disappointing. Spencer, do you have something to say to that? I'm sure you do.
It's harsh on Pep, but I do completely agree at this point. Every season for Man City is kind of Champions League or bust. I think it's very hard to put all that pressure on because a lot of it does come down to some degree of luck. I mean, what if the ball had rebounded the other way off Ederson? What if X had happened? What if De Bruyne hadn't gotten hurt? What if Pep had a brain and played with a CDM? Like, all those little things, it's hard to judge a season based off of it. But with the amount of money he's spent at Man City, I think it's over $1.2 billion at this point.
Yep.
I think he has to bring in a Champions League for what his project is there to be considered a success. Much like Klopp at Liverpool's role was to bring in the Premier League, and I guess the difference between the two managers is Klopp could get it done. And I'm also very happy that my prediction of the U.S. men's national team winning a World Cup before City won the Champions League gets to survive another year. And so I'm very looking forward to when that comes true.
Well, I'm sorry you guys had to hear such a prediction like that. That's very disappointing from us. I will make sure it's that we talk to him about that, as I've already done, but we'll make sure to come back to that one day. Okay.
Well, you came back to it before the game.
All right. So that does wrap up European competitions. Villarreal, Chelsea, two winners. But there's so much more news to talk about beyond this now, of course. So where should we start? I guess let's start with Juventus. Mattia, Juventus bringing back Allegri, Pirlo gone. Thoughts?
Well, I think we could all kind of see it coming. Pirlo maybe not staying another season, even though the board, after their final game, after qualifying for Champions League, did say that Pirlo and Ronaldo would remain at Juve. I think if you're Juventus, once you're presented with the chance, the opportunity to sign Allegri back after he had so many successful seasons and brought them so close to winning the Champions League, I think it was twice. I don't think you squander that chance. And I think it was the right move to bring a player like a coach like Allegri back. I think he's going to try his best to convince Ronaldo. I don't think Ronaldo is in his plans. I think it's Dybala that he wants to convince to stay. But Allegri, again, so much success with the team, and he knows the organization in and out. So I think it's the right move for them. But for Pirlo, I think we could all say his season was not at all successful. I think he needs to just start from a smaller team, as we already talked about, Nico. He needs to start from a mid-table, lower league team and work his way up like most coaches do, or even a youth team. But yeah, I think it's good to have winning DNA back at Juve, and we'll see what they do this summer to try and recuperate some of the success they've had in the past decade. Spencer, what do you make of this new coach
for Juve? I mean, I think it was a very interesting hire by Juventus. I mean, some people would view it as going backwards in a sense, back to where they were before. And I think it would have been very interesting if they had gone with another new manager. I think one person in particular that could have been interesting was Nuno from Wolves.
Mm.
I think he would have been an interesting hire. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm sure they did discuss with Ronaldo before they made the hire, but I definitely do agree that it's more focused towards the future than winning right now, because I think it's somewhat clear that this Juventus squad is not good enough to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, this is just kind of silly. I don't get it. And look, I was very clear on Pirlo that I think he had to go. So, right. There's a bonus already. No offense, nothing against Pirlo. I just think, as you said, Mattia, he needs to start and move up. Juventus is too big of a club to just walk right into. But seriously, I mean, Allegri again? I don't get it. Because you have Allegri and you get Ronaldo. Okay, you go for the Champions League, doesn't work out. So then you remove Allegri. You can bring in Sarri. Another stupid signing, by the way. Didn't work out. And so then at that point, okay, let's rebuild. All right, so you bring in Pirlo. Pirlo is not that great. So you remove Pirlo, and you bring back Allegri with a team that needs to be rebuilt. I don't get it. I don't understand. I mean, what – you can't go back to what you wanted to move on from. And for me, there's nothing different about the Juventus squad. As you say, Spencer, is just not good. They need new players. Ronaldo is the only – and I guess the lid you can say is the only standout players from this team. And I look, it's a bonus that you get rid of Pirlo, but seriously, going back to Allegri, I really think Zidane, who of course now has an open position, this is about 24 hours after they took Allegri, I really think they should have pushed for him. It was reported that he wanted that Juventus job, and you go back to Allegri. I don't get it. Seriously, I don't get it. What are they going to do next year, right? They're not a Champions League contending team. Mm-hmm. Can they compete for the Serie A? Oh, sure. But seriously, you're just kind of going back to what you were before, but you have a worse squad now. Like, what did they gain? Mattia, did they gain anything these last few years from trying to move on from who they were? But they're right back to square one is the way I see it.
No, I think it's difficult, especially with the managers that you have available on the market. Allegri has been out of a job for 2 years now, a little more, But, I mean, when they had him, he brought them a lot of success. Of course, he had a very different team when he had that success. But I believe he deserves another chance and a chance to bring success back to Juventus. And, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. I don't think anybody knows what to expect, really, for Juve next season. We'll see what kind of transfers they try and make. But very interesting signing there. And then we can switch over. Staying in Italy, a lot of drama happening at Inter. And mm-hmm. Inter appointed Simone Inzaghi, Lazio's ex-coach now, as their new coach. Spencer, what do you make of this hire? I think this one's a little bit more out of the blue, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of a shock, at least for me, that Conte left after such a successful season.
Mm-hmm.
And even as we might get to later, he might go to another interesting club. But, yeah. I mean, I think Simone did a good job at Lazio, and mm-hmm. he is a younger manager, which suits Inter more, because it does seem like they're going to have to enter a new project, since they will have to offload a lot of their best players. I think, what was it, 80 million worth of players to balance the books.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good hire. He did well at Lazio. He even got them to the Champions League last year, which was a huge deal for them. So I think it was a very good hire by Inter, considering what they had available, because I don't know many managers that would want to go to a team having to sell 80 million of their best players.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, for me, it's kind of a 50-50 signing. I see the positives, of course, and it's unfortunate that Conte had to go. It's unfortunate that the club wasn't truthfully honest with him these past few years in terms of their financial situation. And as you say, Spencer, right, they need to sell 80 million reportedly worth of players. Hakimi is being reported to back to Madrid, to PSG, for about 60, so you still need some more there. But in terms of the signing of Inzaghi, you know, it's I don't know, right? You had Conte, who was extremely defensive, right? Defense, and then we'll play with Lukaku and Martinez up top, try to create with those two. Well, now you're bringing in Inzaghi, who, I mean, let's say how it is. Like, he's a very attacking coach. His Lazio team was very offensive. So now you're kind of switching the dynamic of the team with mostly the same players. I think that could be a cause for some trouble, at least early on next season. Maybe switching from a defensive coach to an attacking coach on top of who they're going to lose, we don't know yet. I think that could cause some issues, but, you know, Inzaghi is a good coach, and I do think they're going to have some struggles in the beginning, but it will slowly begin to look better as Inzaghi is able to put his spin on this Inter team moving forward. All right, so I think
And then for managers, I mean, talking about managers coming out of the blue, we'll just go quickly because I think it's Sarri, who is very close to Lazio now, and Spalletti, who was Inter's ex-coach a couple of years back, has signed with Napoli. So, I mean, manager mix-up in the Serie A, all very surprising. I don't think anybody can really predict what's going to happen next year. But, I mean, a lot of great managers. Mourinho, Allegri, Inzaghi. So it's going to be exciting.
Conte also is reported to go to Tottenham at the moment, which I think is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that now.
Okay.
Yeah.
According to a lot of sources, Antonio Conte is heading to Tottenham, the former Chelsea manager, and he's supposed to get a long-term contract there. And I just think it's interesting if he was mad at Inter's lack of spending to go to Tottenham, who would spend even less. But there were a few names linked. Pochettino was also rumored to want to go back. Nuno at one point was linked. And I just wanted to hear if you were Tottenham, who you would sign. And why you think all these managers, all these great managers, would want to go to Tottenham.
I really don't have a single clue. I think Tottenham had a very disappointing season. And on top of that, you'll probably see Harry Kane leaving, even though, I mean, it's gonna, I don't know what team is gonna be able to rack up the funds to buy him. He wants to leave. He's on his way out. So you have a Kane-less Tottenham sitting in a Conference League spot in the Premier League, which next year is going to be undoubtedly very, very strong and very competitive. I don't see the logic behind Conte leaving Inter and then a week later, reportedly, or on the verge of signing with a team like Tottenham. If I was him, I wouldn't accept it. I would wait for another job offer. There were Real Madrid rumors, but of course we'll get to what happened there in a bit. But I think this is nonsensical from Conte. I wouldn't even take a. Actually, I would, but I don't think a. I don't think a top. I mean, Conte is a top class manager right now. I don't think any top class manager should be considering a job at Tottenham at the moment. Nico, what do you make of it?
You know, it's two-sided for me. From a Tottenham perspective, I think this is a great signing. I really do.
Yeah.
Why? Because, all right, so you have a team that cannot defend. So now you're bringing in a manager who wants to defend. And you know, I know you're saying, well, okay, well, look at Mourinho. It's the same way. You know, I think Mourinho's signing in a lot of ways is unlucky. You have a team that doesn't win, so you're bringing in a manager who does win. But this is the problem, right? Tottenham is a team full of losers. You know, that it sucks to say, but, you know, losers. So one thing you can say about Conte.
And they lack identity.
Right, they lack identity. And they lack grit.
Yeah.
And work, you know, not work ethic. I don't want to say that because, you know, Kane. But the grit and hunger and drive. And Antonio Conte is grit, hunger, and drive, yeah. You know, all together in one. And so for me, from a Tottenham perspective, they're bringing in a coach who's definitely going to whip up these players into shape, into very aggressive and, you know, hungry to win players, which Tottenham as a club just desperately need. You know, Harry Kane, I'm not so sure he's going to be leaving this year. I don't think there's a club that's going to be able to put that money in, maybe City. But beyond that, I really think he's going to be here for one more year. So as a Tottenham perspective, this is a great signing. But as you say, Mattia, from a Conte perspective, you know, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of work to be done. There's not a lot of money to spend. And so it's hard because there's not a lot of other jobs out there available. And I guess he doesn't want to take a year off, as some managers do. So for him, it's a little bit of a it's definitely going to be a struggle. But primarily, from a Tottenham perspective, I really do think this is a wonderful signing, something that can really help them. Maybe not win instantly, but definitely for after Conte, they'll have a whole new changing room. I really think so. Not in terms of physical players, but in terms of the mentality of the players within them. So I think that's an interesting signing on its own. But yeah, I mean, from Conte, it's a little bit rushed, I feel like. Could have waited off a little more, but
yeah.
Of course, one of the clubs, right, I think we can shift on. One of the clubs that he was reported to was Real Madrid. We shift to Spain. There's a lot of manager talks in Spain. Of course, since then, we know that Real Madrid have brought back Carlo Ancelotti from Everton. You know, we'll get to the – well, I guess no. Let's get to it right now. Mattia, what are your thoughts on that kind of a surprising, out of nowhere, and quick move from Ancelotti?
Quick, and I don't think Carlo Ancelotti expected it at all either way. I wouldn't expect it being in his shoes. Of course, you have reputation and all that, but his past two managerial stints have not been at all successful. He had a good team in Everton, and he started out well, but, I mean, they just overall were poor this – not poor, but they lacked something this season. And I don't see the logic behind it for Real Madrid. As we talked about it privately, as a signing would have made more sense. I liked Conte to Real Madrid personally. I know you don't, but I mean, I guess this is also a big hit for Everton. You have to look at the team that he's leaving. Everton had a great coach in Ancelotti, even though he didn't have much success with them. I think it's going to be hard to replace someone like him. But yeah, I think, and another thing is we're going to see El Clasico, if Koeman doesn't leave, an El Clasico of two ex-Everton managers, which is crazy. But Spencer, what are your thoughts?
I think I forget who it was exactly, but I saw one tweet from an Everton fan saying that two of their ex-managers who finished in the bottom half of the league and got fired, one got fired, the other left, are going to be heading El Clasico, which is crazy that the ex-Evertonians are managing the biggest game in the world. And, I mean, I thought Ancelotti would be a good hire at first for Madrid, but then I saw his comments today, which made me think he might be a little stuck in the past, mentioning that Bale and Marcelo and I think Isco would play huge roles, when it's kind of clear to anyone who watched Madrid last year that they were kind of dead weight. And they were just huge contracts that should be offloaded.
Yeah. Look, I got to be honest with you about this signing. I have no idea what to think about this signing. You know, there's pros and cons. You know, as I've been saying in previous episodes, right, Madrid is going to go through a big summer, big window coming up. There's so many guys coming back, so many guys with contracts in the air, so many guys leaving. Perez is looking at new board members. I mean, it's going to be a complete switch in this club moving on. And so I really wanted someone that knows the club, right? That's why we're really looking at Raul. You know, Conte, for me, didn't make sense. Different brand of football. Him and Perez would not get along at all with each other in any way. So it would have been a disaster. Mm-hmm. Pochettino would have been fun, but, you know, he's on contract at PSG. They didn't want to let him go. So I was really looking at Raul, because he knows the club, he knows a lot of the players. But of course, the pro to that was no experience as a first team coach. And so, Ancelotti knows the players, knows the club, and has experience. So, those are all pros. The cons, as Matias says, is that, you know, Napoli didn't do anything. Everton have been far under the expectation that we had them at. He didn't do, I'm not saying he did a bad job, it's just, it was a little bit disappointing, has to be said. And so, coming back to a club like Real Madrid now, it's a huge, no offense, Everton fans. The huge change in level, which he hasn't been at in a few years. On top of that, Spencer, you're right. I'm a little bit nervous about who he wants, you know, moving forward. Bale, Isco, Marcelo, legends for Real Madrid. Maybe not Isco, but legends.
Bale's a Madrid legend.
Yeah, of course. But they need to move on, right? So they need to move on, and the contract and the wage bill from these guys needs to be dumped. And if he really wants to keep all three, especially Bale, right, the biggest wage of all, decisions need to be made. Because, again, you know, Mariano, Mayoral, and Jovic, all three strikers are going to be behind Benzema. Two of those have to go. They need to get rid of a goalie. They need to get rid of Odriozabal. Kubo's coming back. Odegaard and Ceballos are dead weight. Brahim Diaz is coming back. There is just a ton of dead weight. And again, it's the difference between dead weight and death, right? Odegaard and Ceballos are not death. Dead weight. Mariano is dead weight. And so is Bale, Isco, Marcelo. It has to be said. They have not been good this season. Of course, Bale is a little bit of a different story. But so, look, for me, I don't think it's a bad signing. I don't. But I'm telling you, this summer is going to be chaotic, and I'm not so sure Ancelotti is going to be able to move beyond, you know, it's not 2014, as you said, Spencer. It's not 2014. He needs to be willing to move beyond that. So overall, I'm really 50-50 on this. I don't know where it's going to go, but at least you have someone that knows the club. That's all I can say. someone that's experienced in Madrid. It's the only value I see from this. And his wage bill, only $6 million a year. It's pretty nice. That has to be said. So, it's going to Real Madrid. Interesting signing. Hopefully it turns out well. Where else do we want to go, boys? I guess we can stick in Spain. I guess we'll go to Barcelona. Why not? They signed Aguero, Spencer. They signed Eric Garcia. They just signed Emerson, who I think is the only good signing so far they've made. Which Naldum, I guess, as well. It's not a bad signing. Depay has been offered a contract. Coleman's up in the air. Coutinho's up in the air. Messi's up in the air. Spencer, what's going on, Barcelona? What are you thinking right now?
I think it's chaos at Barcelona. I think there's only one understandable explanation for the Aguero signing, and that it's Messi kind of threatened them and said, Aguero, where I quit. Because other than that, it makes absolutely no sense as to why they would sign a 33-year-old striker who couldn't even start ahead of Gundogan up top. And, I mean, especially after they offloaded Luis Suarez last summer because they thought he was too old, even though he was the same age. And we also saw how well that worked out for Barcelona. And, I mean, I like the Eric Garcia signing. I don't know as much about Emerson as you do, but from what I've heard, that's a good signing, although it might not be good news for Sergiño Dest.
No.
But, I mean, it just doesn't really make sense because Wijnaldum especially is a win-now signing. Barcelona are not going to win now. I don't see them competing with a lot of the top teams. Last year was pathetic, and they don't need midfielders. They could use a couple midfielders, but they don't need attackers. They need defenders. And dropping however much they spent on Aguero and looking at Dubai too just makes no sense because they're also already so overloaded up top. Coutinho, Dembele, Griezmann, Messi, add in Aguero, Ansu Fati, Braithwaite. Conrad De La Fuente.
Trincao.
Trincao.
Tons.
How can they play all these players? It just doesn't make any sense for me. And I have no clue what Laporte is doing up there. And you thought things would get better after Bartomeu left, and it seems that they haven't gotten better in any sense.
Yeah.
Look, let me ask you a question, because what do you think about the Memphis Depay contract offer? Because I have to say, as a Madrid fan, I really hope he signs that contract. from a Barcelona perspective.
What are the details?
Well, the wage has not been described yet. However, it has been reported that it's going to be a wage increase from Lyon. So we're not getting any cheaper here. We know he's a striker. He can play his cam to an extent, but he's really a striker. Of course, we know what you're going to say. That's not that good of a signing, okay? But what are you thinking about Barcelona and that signing as a whole as well?
I mean, so I think a lot of people are underestimating. I like the Eric Garcia signing, and it's been a rumor, and it's been confirmed for quite some time now. And I like it. He's a young center back. They have a lot of young players on defense. Not necessarily good players, but I mean, they have a lot of young prospects. And I think it's a Barcelona that has to rebuild, that is rebuilding, and it's a good sign. But then you go on and sign Aguero, who is on the tail end of his career, who gets injured every year, and you sign Wijnaldum, who Spencer said it perfectly, is a win now type of signing. Which is a mediocre signing. I mean, along with Depay, these aren't exceptional players. They're players that are at the tail end of their primes or just not even in their primes anymore. And of course, it's a team that badly needs defensive players, and it's not looking any better for them at the moment. And I don't know.
It's confusing because, again, as I said in the last episode, a week before, I guess 2 weeks now, the Forza came out and said he wants to go young, to rebuild through the youth, directly. It's direct quotes, right? Young academy. You talked about the Mazio a lot,
mm-hmm.
but now you're signing Aguero and Wijnaldum and Depay. I don't get it. I really don't get it. The Emerson signing is a great signing. I mean, he had an amazing year at Betis, so that is a good signing. It was cheap.
He's young.
Eric Garcia, I agree with you, Matia. He's a good player. He hasn't played a ton, but he is a good player, and it was cheap. So again, that's not a bad signing. But I mean, you need starters, right? You need Piqué and Lenglet cannot be a center back partnership duo again. It can't be. Wijnaldum is not going to light up that midfield from what it was last season, and so there's a lot of offloading and a lot of new players that need to come in that aren't attackers. Seriously.
Yeah, and we've been saying it for so long.
Yeah, and so we can keep saying it over and over again, but at some point, it's just who is actually going to take the leap and have some common sense to this club, because it doesn't look like Laporta is at the moment.
Yeah.
All right.
I think we can. I mean, going on the notion of common sense, I want to touch on this quickly because there are a lot of rumors that Andre Onana, Ajax goalkeeper who has been banned from for drug usage, I think, has been rumored and is very close to Arsenal now. And I don't know how down bad you can be, but Arsenal is pretty down bad because, I mean, it looks like it's basically done. I mean, it's just ridiculous at this point, but I just wanted to quickly go over that because it's just banter at this point. It's funny.
I mean, I think it's clear that Arsenal made the wrong decision keeping Leno over Emi Martinez, who looks unbelievable. And now it looks like Leno's time at Arsenal is going to be cut short. But the thing is about Onana is he just had a hearing today over whether or not his suspension will proceed or what will happen to it. He appealed it. And it seems that if it gets overruled, since he has a chance to say his story, which was he accidentally took his wife's medication pills in. They charged him for doping.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not that's true, I don't know. But either way, it's an interesting signing from Arsenal. But he was a good goal. He was a very good goalkeeper at one point. So I can see why they would be interested in
him. And he would be for very cheap. I think it's roughly $7 million.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is, okay. They're going to get Onana. They're going to replace Leno. The reality is I can name you 8 other positions that Arsenal really need an upgrade, more importantly than Leno. seriously, I mean, about 8 or 9 other positions. So,
They sold Guendouzi now. They just sold Guendouzi for $13 million, which is ridiculous.
Look, Arsenal for me are not going in the right direction, they haven't been for years. And who Onana reminds me a lot of was Leno back at Leverkusen. I mean, I know he's better than Leno, but Leno at Leverkusen was amazing. He's had his moments at Arsenal, has to be said. But overall, he has not been. He's not a number one for Arsenal. Arsenal as a club, Onana's better, but. Seriously, what does this change for Arsenal next year? For me, it's basically nothing. So, Arsenal. Who needs to talk about Arsenal?
Yeah. Well, I think that's basically all that we got. You guys want to talk about? There's also some rumors going out around that Pochettino might want to head out of PSG, but I don't think we're talking about until it's very. It's official, or if it ever will be.
All right. I think that's everything.
Yeah.
All right.
Euros start next week.
Okay. Very should happen that real quick or no? And we're right now.
Should we save the Euro predictions for next episode?
Yeah, we can do a Euro prediction for next episode.
Okay. So, as a whole, that does wrap up the episode for this week. We'll get into the Euro Cup predictions next week, starting up soon, as Matias said. Per usual, thank you guys for listening, and we can't wait to see you guys in the next episode.